Hello, everyone. My name is Joshua Gilliland, and I'm one of the founding attorneys of Legal Geeks. With me are two good friends, Steve and Sylvia, who get to say cool things like, we represent the United States, or, for the people, cool things like that that I don't get to do in private practice. And we're all going to nerd out about the Star Spangled Man, the second episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Continues to be a pinata of wonderful legal issues for us to talk about. Sylvia and Steve, how are you each doing today?
I'm good. Yeah, tired, but I'm good.
Doing great. Thank you, Josh.
It's that thing with lawyers. We all work hard during the week, so it's nice to. I consider this such a reward on Fridays after work to get to watch Falcon and Winter Soldier, and then get to talk about it with you two. So it's a nice feeling. So we see the opening with John Walker, who's the new Captain America, and they seem to be echoing a lot of the mid-80s themes that they did when Walker became Cap in the comic. He's part of the government, and they say he's a three-time Medal of Honor winner, which is surprising. I don't know how many times there were a double Medal of Honor winner. I think that could be counted on one hand. That's really rare. And they do try making him little jaw Captain America and go back to his high school, debut him for Good Morning America, which raises the issue: is his long, luxurious hair under covered by army regulations? And I don't think so. Looking at the standards, they do seem to have gotten a little bit more liberal, but that seems to have been mostly for female soldiers. I'm not a JAG. I'm sure Thomas Harper would be able to share more about this. I do know that with soldiers who are in special forces, who go out into, say, doing special forces ops, they get kind of deregulated with being able to grow beards and long hair. But he clearly has long, luxurious hair, and I don't know if that'd be armed. Sylvia, you have a spouse who's in the service.
I do actually. He's on the oh, wrong way. He's in the Air Force. His little frame is back there, and he actually had quite a lot to say about that and about Bucky just walking onto an Air Force airplane. And he was like, "Oh no, that would not happen." Yeah, he's in the Air Force, so that hair clip is not even in the Air Force. It's not even in the Air Force. A little looser, like you said. They did allow women a little more liberties now. Especially women with braids or women of color to have their hair braided and things of that nature, but not for the men. That haircut is not for the men. Okay.
Yeah, that was again like reading the regs. It's like, wow, this is really progressive. But you don't see anything about dudes with, that mane of hair. So anyway, good to get his perspective. And I'm sure we'll talk about Bucky and his just hopping on a C-130 to Germany and all the issues that happened with that. So up
You
next.
know, on the haircut issue, though, while it is not regulation, I think that's very clear, regardless of what branch of service. There is another point, and that is that the Captain America role is also very symbolic and ceremonial. So I would imagine that it could be possible that the person occupying that role may be exempt from certain rules, including the haircut rule, because this is someone who's going to be, cutting red ribbons and appearing at, dinners and functions and things like that. So, it's possible. There will be a lot of ceremonial duties for the person who occupies this role.
And he would definitely have a lot more media attention than an average soldier, for sure. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And the Captain America movie, the First Avenger actually did a good job exploring that, because if you recall, Steve Rogers in the movie is really just the kind of war bond salesperson, ceremonial, and he's not really a soldier until he decides to take matters into his own hands and actually, you know, gets a group together. So that, I thought that was pretty well done in that movie. And then, you know, they also explore some similar themes in the comics as well. But for those of you who have not, are unfamiliar, Captain America, Sentinel of Liberty, this is the best origin of Captain America, a four-part series. And it really reads like a World War II story, because that is what it is. And it talks all about getting the super soldier serum, meeting Bucky, and you know, a lot of things, actually. So much of the first movie was based on that story.
And it is a timeless story, and it's a little different than what Simon and Kirby did, but it echoes true.
Yes.
Which, you know, highlights, they do have this a spin on the song, the Star-Spangled Man. They have, you know, the full-on band playing, you know, the high school marching band. They have the Capettes dancing, which is problematic. You know, berets instead of helmets, you know, just seems awkward in this day and age to see that. And I don't know if it's just like having been living under COVID protocols for so long, but seeing a crowd, it's like, what are you doing? Where are your masks?
It looks true, right.
Dangerous. Yeah, it's going to take a while to get used to that again. So, go to the movie theater. Which, let's break down the organizations that look like the bad guys. And it looks like we're going to have at least two groups, maybe three, that we're going to have to contend with for being the villains. And let's just name them. So we get the Flag Smashers, then we have the Power Broker, and then we have whoever Zemo is leading, and he's in prison right now. And we don't know how much synergy there's going to be, or if we're going to with three different bad guys throughout the course of this series, with bad guy on bad guy conflict as well. And I think it'd be good to break down the categories of these two known groups, and we can opine about Zemo because he's in prison, and rightly so, for terrorism and doing all kinds of bad things. But up first are the Flag Smashers. So they're the group that people who remained, so they survived the first snap or the blip, and then they survived, they're upset people came back. So it's this, after half the population disappeared, might have been people in the have not category, the 99% category, who suddenly either became middle class or suddenly started doing well, and they're upset half the population came back and they feel displaced. So they seem to be trafficking vaccines, which I'm going to guess is super soldier serum. And they have their one people, one world chant. And then you throw in the fact that they also are using augmented reality and cybercrime to organize and have safe houses and all kinds of fun stuff. And let's you know, do they fall under the definition of a terrorist? And Steve, thoughts on that?
So, you know, if we have up, Josh, you were kind enough to pull together some of the research, you know, 18 U.S.C. 2331, one definition of international terrorism. I'll go through the elements very quickly, but number one, they involve violent acts or acts that are dangerous to human life, that are a violation of the criminal laws of the United States or any state, that would be a crime if committed, you know, within that jurisdiction. I'm paraphrasing. Second, appear to be intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, or to influence the policy of a government by intimidation, or to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction. Essentially, that's sort of like the doing bad acts category. And then third, you know, occur primarily outside the jurisdiction of the United States. So you're outside domestic jurisdiction, you're looking into international activities at this point. You know, I think if we go with a fairly strict reading of that statute, then the flag smashers almost certainly meet that qualification, and they would qualify as international terrorists. Legally, that can have some significance because, you know, when people fall, when groups or people fall into certain categories, legal categories, that opens up the avenues, possibilities for how countries can deal with them. We're talking about things like getting funding, getting resources, pooling together perhaps military forces or international law enforcement. It's a little easier in those situations to get a little more cooperation typically between nations. And, you know, the difficulty here, of course, is we have an international group, the Flag Smashers. You know, we've seen them operating in Germany. We know that they're going through Europe. They're going from one jurisdiction to another. So that can create jurisdictional issues. You know, typically the United States couldn't just drop into any country it wishes without at least giving a heads up to some of the people there, whether it be governments or their military or whatnot. I mean, there are political consequences. There are diplomatic consequences. So if this is an international terrorist group, that can, at least can, make things a little bit easier. I want to point out, just from a storytelling perspective, in classic Marvel fashion, they do a good job of blurring the lines between, you know, black and white, good and evil. Because we are introduced to the Flag Smashers in episode one, we see them undertake this violent action where they're robbing or stealing something. They beat up, you know, Torres, our viewpoint character. So you're thinking, oh, these are just really bad guys. In the second episode, the one we're talking about now, we get a little more story development into why they are the way they are. In episode one, we hear simply that they like things better the way they were during the blip. So, you know, I think the gut reaction typically is like, oh, that's horrible. How could you be happier with half the population gone? Episode two, we hear a little bit more about why that is so. And what we hear is that these are people who were sort of on the outside looking in, and life got better for them under the blip. They had more power, more authority, more control over their own lives. And since the, you know, blip has been restored, if you will, that the full population is back now, the people who were here the entire time during the blip are now being left behind. And as they say, the international organizations now only care about the people who just recently came back. They do not care about the people who were there before. You know, that we don't know enough yet to judge that, but it certainly seems to be a possibility. Yeah. And we definitely know that this group believes that to the point where they're, you know, undertaking extremist acts. Go ahead, Josh. Or Sylvia, sorry.
Right. I remember the family that was housing them told them they're being referred to as Robin Hood. So it's the whole thing between good and evil. I mean, Robin Hood was taking from the rich to give to the poor. So it's kind of like, oh, okay. So, yeah.
Right. So, you know, are they, strictly speaking, are they violating laws? Well, absolutely. And they're committing some violence. But do they have some larger purposes that make them more sympathetic? Yeah, I think probably. You know, we're learning more about that. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I'm less sympathetic to those who like to terrorize others. I mean, the entire concept of this, things are being taken away from us to help others. It's like I call malarkey on that. You know, that's like complaining that people in Texas who lost power because of freezing cold weather and FEMA's going down to make sure that they don't die. It's like, how dare you? It's like people are more concerned about those who are freezing to death than those who are here in the fields in Iowa. It's like, that's how this works. Like, have you no empathy? Have you no agape? Or literally, you know, as Bucky says later, there are literally hundreds of refugee camps for people who returned, like either their homes are gone or other people are living in their home, and like they're rebuilding their lives. And I mean, just the pure arrogance to go, oh, I'm upset because my life is less good because people came back and they're living in refugee camps, and I'm upset that I'm not on top anymore. I have, you know, decency is my reaction to that. It's now I, everyone needs to work together. It's like, that's the purpose of help people who are hurt, who are suffering. And yeah, that does mean that like there could be taxes, and those who might've been left behind, you know, after the snap, well, that could have been hell for the first few months or even a year for things to stabilize. Like if everyone who knew how to operate nuclear reactors or all the airline pilots lost and they were the, you know, part of the blip, it's just like commerce could have come to a grinding halt. Or just as we see with the, you know, the cargo ship stuck in the Suez Canal and people are now going around Cape of Good Hope, like imagine if global shipping came to a crashing halt and how that negatively affected. So this, the idea of I'm upset, therefore I'm going to take a super soldier serum and go level the playing field with those who were dead for 5 years because you want revenge, because you want to be back on top, that's just not right. But that's me.
Well, we think that's where they're, you know, what they stand for right now. I don't think we fully know yet, but we'll find out more.
Yeah, and I love the fact that they're by, you know, who played Infus Nest in the
film. Yes, and in Solo. Yet again, a revolutionary.
She's wearing a revolutionary. Wearing a mask, who's thought as a hostage. It's just, oh, it's, yes. I'm glad she's working. I'm glad she's part of the Disney family. So it's like, it's great. Yeah. To
but once Bucky jumps into that, you know, into that storage area, you know that she's not an innocent bystander, right? I mean, Bucky's going to take one between the eyes there. And he does.
Yeah, it's just, on the flip side, just from an operational standpoint, why was she writing back there like that? It's like, right. I'm going to be sitting on the floor with my knees to my chest, looking like I've had a really rough day and I'm being, you know, a victim of human trafficking. And like, that's just how she likes to travel. It's weird. But I digress. Let's talk about the issue of I'm feeling the vaccines are super soldier serum.
Yeah,
it just, it'd be weird if it wasn't. I mean, like, it'd be weird if it was a vaccine.
If it were a real, the group gets a little more sympathetic, you know, and like, oh, they're trying to deliver medicine to people in need. Okay, well, all right, now it's a little different.
Now they really bug this. Yeah,
it's just, so you want to go soup up, you know, those who were, who were left behind so they can go exact revenge on others. It's like, Sylvia, I want to get your thoughts about, is that super soldier serum going to be covered under like export control licensing if it was developed by the US government? If you have a terrorist group trafficking this, like, does that fall under like, you know, a WMD category? Like, what's your reaction to them trafficking a super soldier serum potentially?
Well, we don't have anything like that I remember from the episodes that it came from the US. So ideally, I think it's stayed in that area, the Europe area. But they're definitely crossing lines. And that was clear when they got to their first location and they were like, you can stay here. And there are other places where you can get refuge as you move across, you know, the Europe places. So definitely going from crossing state lines and trafficking. I just don't know if we don't have anything that it came from the U.S. from this episode. I don't think so. But obviously the U.S. is involved. I mean, Captain America is involved in trying to stop this, you know. I would say that I don't know, because I don't know if it comes from the U.S.
There, it could be attenuated. Let's just say that the super soldier serum was developed from Erkston's design, and let that Hydra captured or imprisoned Isaiah for 30 years, and you know, he did reference them taking his blood, and that there was a reference to the Soviets developing super soldiers as well during the Cold War. So it was stolen from the United States, either with Isaiah being a POW of some kind, or because I think that would have to be the linchpin. So we do know that there are two strains of the formula. There's the US version that made Captain America, and then there's the Hydra version that enhanced Bucky, which is, so if it came from the US version somehow, say, I do think we an argument that there's a US hook that way. If it came from the Hydra strain, then it's different. I still think it's an act of terrorism, but like the US involvement now changes. And I do think it'd be like stealing nuclear weapons, you know, at that point. You know, it doesn't matter if the bomb was stolen from a US base or a Russian base. The fact is that the idea is live and at play, and that has to be addressed. So a couple ways to look at it, and I don't think we have enough facts to fully make it, but I do think it's a fun issue.
You know, oh, I will.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, I will point out that it's interesting that this is happening in Munich, in Germany. You know, the original super soldier serum was perfected by Abe Erskine, who fled Nazi Germany to come to America. Somewhat similar, sort of a comic version of the Manhattan Project, where some of the brightest, you know, best and brightest in the world come together to build essentially a weapon. And, you know, so it's a German scientist that perfects that and gives, you know, the super soldier serum to Steve Rogers. So if this is an offshoot of that, it's just interesting that the roots, you know, the scientists came from Germany. This serum is in Germany. It was never ultimately perfected for the Nazi side, although, you know, they were able to have some success with the Red Skull and others. So there are definitely some questions as to the origin here. You know, if this is some strand of Dr. Erskine's, you know, work product, there would be some U.S. involvement, you know, because he worked for the military and the government when he developed this.
Which then brings us to where they got it, which raises the power broker. And in the, again, this is echoes of my childhood. It feels good to be a 40-something, a Gen Xer, to go like, as a kid, it's so nice to, you know, the people in charge making stories now were the same vintage, or they've done great research, and being able to go, let's bring in the power broker. And we see the mean text of, I'm going to find and kill you. So they're clearly not on the same team. And we do have what looked like a private army from the power broker sent to go kill the flag smashers and get back the vaccines, which shows that he's selling superpowers and selling enhancements. And there, I mean, the comic stories with those were immense, and just to see that they're it in, be interesting to see how they go with it. But Sylvia, putting on your law enforcement hat, like, what's your reaction to this group that's trafficking arguably an illegal substance or something that could be designated under export control licensing that could be used by nefarious individuals who are not following any laws? Your reaction?
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely they, this super serum would aid in the development of weapons of mass destruction given the strength we've seen in the individuals that already have it. So I think it's you can prosecute this. I'm curious as to, like, prosecution wise, like, will we prosecute the people, the power broker, or this, the masked people who are, you know, driving the serums around? I think they're both equally culpable in my opinion, because the brokers are trying to get the serum from them. So then what are they going to do with it? The same thing, essentially, you know, it's just like, yeah. Definitely.
It's instead of it being super soldier serum, it's, you know, cocaine. It's just, yeah. You know, it's like, so it's a, you know, the, your mule turned on you. It's all gone into business for themselves, selling to
essentially, yeah, your dealer. Essentially, your dealer just turned on you. Yeah, there you go, kind of.
Yeah, in no way reflective of ever, but you know, you get that never happens. Steve, your reaction at that, is that everything, or is there, you know, because again, there are two groups here.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, we at first think the Flag Smashers are, you know, the villains, if you will, and then we get this text that we see like, oh wait, these guys are all on the run as well from someone else. So there's a third faction. And again, Marvel storytelling is pretty good here. It gets complicated. So it's not, there is no black and white. And really what you've got is just different interest groups, essentially. I think it's worth pointing out that no one has a legal right to the super soldier serum, if that is indeed what it is. And I think most likely it is. Neither of these groups really should have any right to it. It's unlikely that they manufactured it, because that typically would have been a military type of project by one or multiple countries. So, you know, Bucky and Cap's mission, or Bucky and Falcon's mission, you know, they're trying to get this back if it has in fact been stolen. Although that last part has not really been established yet. You know, we haven't heard a briefing from the United States government or anyone else say, oh, hey, they took our serum. But what we've got is like this large conspiracy with a lot of secrets, you know, as we see when we meet, the former, or I guess the older super soldier, you know, Isaiah.
Yeah. And oh God, we'll have a field day with that in a couple minutes. But this is like trafficking plutonium or cocaine. Neither of them should have it. Like, it's just, we don't want people playing soldier. Like, we recently saw that. We don't like that. It upsets us.
Yeah.
It doesn't show for a stable world order, because there's a social contract. That's why we have laws. Like, we just, like, laws exist so people can feel safe and know that you're not going to get mugged or beat up. And there's more with that, because this is a nice deep look here. So just to set up the bad guys, let's focus on the good guys. So we have Bucky goes to confront Sam about, like, you shouldn't give up the shield. And again, he's a 106-year-old vet who was programmed by Hydra, pardoned by the president, and is able to just stroll onto a military base, and the Falcon's writing his own orders, appropriating a C-130 with like a crew of three, and they go wherever they want. There's a lot there, but getting onto a military base, you have an ID, you have to have a reason for being there. I mean, I get the ex-spy, you know, probably knows how to sneak onto places. Or maybe he has an Avengers card now and they just let him in. Membership has its privileges. But Steve, putting on your government hat, if you found out that a, you know, US military contract just went to Germany, airdropped in at an altitude of 200 feet to go to a black ops mission to take out some terrorists, would you all be concerned?
There are multiple levels of concern there. We would have to think carefully before we could figure out what we could do. However, the issue of him getting on a military base, military bases, are supposed to be secure areas. Here in San Diego, we have multiple naval and marine, although marine is technically a part of Department of Navy, military bases. And typically one has to show ID in order to get on. And that's typically going to have to be a military ID. There are some bases that are used to having contractors and civil service people regularly come on. So just by showing some sort of government credential, you can also get on that way. So even if Bucky is no longer active duty military, and he does not appear to be. I mean, he would be some status of perhaps reserve or retired, but he would still have some form of ID. So he, you know, I think he's able to get onto the military base. I don't know that that is a problem. And access also becomes different depending on the level of alert of the base as well. We don't have any reason to believe that there's, you know, a high level of alert at the moment, at least. So it probably is a little more lax. So, you know, Bucky being on the base to begin with, I don't think is such a huge problem. Bucky just kind of deciding he's going to tag along, you know, on the C-130 with Sam. That's a little more suspect. You know, if this is a black ops mission, then we're starting to get off the books anyways. And the rule book kind of goes out the window. So it becomes a bit more of a free for all. And we're trying to impose laws and order into a naturally chaotic situation. So it gets a little more dicey. It's hard for us to tell him what he can and cannot do if they're already sort of off the books. And as Sam and Bucky say later to the new Captain America, John Walker, they say, look, we're not bound by the same rules you guys are. We're almost like free agents. So we can kind of do what we want to do. And, you know, if we put aside the strict rules for a moment and just take into consideration the practical realities, you know, Sam is a valuable asset for the government. He probably has some discretion in things he can do if he's achieving mission goals. He may be given some, you know, degree of latitude, and that may involve getting to select some people to bring with him, including Bucky. So, you know, if they got the job done, I suspect that they wouldn't really be in any trouble over how they got it done. But that's my thought. Sylvia, I think you had some thoughts as well about jumping on the C-130.
Yeah, well, first of all, being a military spouse, my husband on the Air Force was like, nope, that wouldn't happen. Yeah. But believe no. Yeah, he's like, that would never happen. And then also jumping out without a parachute. No.
Wow. Yeah.
But yeah, like you mentioned, Sam literally told Captain America, I guess you can call him. I still don't like, I miss Chris Evans, but that's a personal problem.
John Walker is U.S. agent to me personally, but yeah.
And, you know, they have rules of engagement, you know. They can't even go on a mission without getting approval. And Sam kind of like is like you said, free. He can do what he wants. And I don't think he has like anyone really controlling him as much, because when I think you said, I think his name is Torres, the cute guy that, you know, he works with in the military.
Yes.
You know, as soon as he sent him the video and the picture, like, we need to get on this, you know, we need to figure out what's going on. And it wasn't like approval. It wasn't anything. It was like, let's get on a plane. Let's start this mission. Versus, you know, Captain America needed, like you said, rules of engagement. We can't do this. We have to do it this way. And so it's, I'm wondering how much free for all he was given, or if it was really just, we know you do well. We know you accomplished the mission. We trust you as the U.S. government. Go do your thing kind of thing. But he does have some limitations, because in the beginning of episode one, he couldn't cross into Libya.
Right.
So he does have some kind of pullback. So it's just, where is that line drawn, essentially?
Yeah, he still represents the United States. So, you know, there's certain things he should not do, definitely. Right.
But C-130s aren't stealth. So there's that. And they're going to have to, I don't know the range, but if it can cross the Atlantic from Baltimore or Washington, D.C. to Munich, you know, that, I mean, we couldn't do that in World War II until we were looking at some of the super strata forces that we didn't make, but we were starting to plan being able to have a bomb take off in the East Coast, Germany, and fly back, but we won the war and didn't have to build those planes. They got to And sure, they can refuel midair, but they're calling in to check in, because airports are going to be going like, what the hell is this C-130? Like, it's going to have a transponder on, unless it's in black ops mode and somehow is just a radar blip. But yeah, they're and is Germany cool with that? Of I mean, granted, since James Bond movies, Europe is the playground for spies. Like, we're used to seeing that in movies because Cold War, it's what we did. That's fun storytelling. But with the technology that we have in the world that survived Thanos, you think people would be a little edge when that sort of thing happened. They would just kind of freak out. Did either of you say ow watching Bucky fall through the trees? I did.
Oh, yeah.
Only when he crashed, that was it. When he got to the bottom.
I just watching that, I was like, no, ow, stop. Like, it's just, don't jump out of a plane at 200 feet. That just, I mean, it does highlight how enhanced he is to survive that. But still, that's one heck of a beating to take. Well, let's switch to, we're in Germany, and we see the trucks getting loaded, and in plain, kind of plain view, it's an issue with Bucky and Sam. Do they have legal justification to enter that building stealthily? So there's a out of the gate a Fourth Amendment issue, and with our spies doing spy things in Germany. But they can see individuals lifting things that should be done with a forklift. And they're loading up the trucks. They think a hostage is one of the trucks, and they decide to pursue. Sylvia, is that enough of a justification for them to try to stop the trucks?
Well, first of all, Sam, we know, is working on behalf of the U.S. government. But we don't know. Bucky's just there, you know? So technically, he's not an agent of the U.S. government. So as far as Fourth Amendment goes, I don't know if that, you know, if he's just being Bucky, then that might not apply to him. But as far as the justification, I don't think the crates alone would have given him sufficient justification. But definitely seeing Carrie look like a hostage, and in their eyes, they were like, and she was, like you said earlier, she was sitting in the whole, you know, kind of like feel. She looked like she was scared, and you already have a life in danger at that point. At that point, you're saving that person's life. Or at least that's what you think you're doing. And if your impression is that, you know, she's a hostage, she's in danger, she's going to be trafficked, or they're going to use her, whatever, then I think at that point you are justified to jump on the truck to save a person. I do think it's interesting that I wonder if Marvel knew that too, because they didn't jump on until they saw the hostage. Because it was when Bucky turned and said they got a hostage, or Sam, because he saw it with his thing, that they were like, let's go. You know, at that point they were like, okay, we got free for all, let's go save this person. So that's what I think gave them the justification, was that.
Yeah, I would love it if they were consulting us, but they're not. So we are available. But yeah, whatever lawyer that was giving them advice, or if the writers are just well-versed in this, they are following the right instincts, as opposed to, we'll just order an airstrike. And so a little there. Let's get into the issue of the reference to the Global Repatriation Council. And when they said that, again, I giggled, because it's just like, thank God they're thinking in terms of what would actually happen if half the people disappear and then 5 years later they reappear and everything's whacked because of that. So it's, everything's not like a nice clean ending that an end game. And what was alluded to in Spider-Man Far From Home made it sound less bad. And like Aunt May found somebody else living in her apartment because she'd been gone for 5 years. They do talk about like doing fundraisers for people who were displaced. Meaning it a lot deeper with going, they had to form an international organization. So it's not just countries. Does this mean that people reappeared in different parts of the planet? Monica, that we see in WandaVision, she reappeared where she disappeared. So it was in a hospital room, and it was by her mom, and her mom's not there anymore because it's 5 years later. And so like that raises question, if like somebody disappeared in Germany, did they reappear in England or someplace convenient like Antarctica? Like, that would suck. Or let's say you disappeared flying cross country. Did you reappear at 37,000 feet without an airplane? Did it rain people? Because again, that would have sucked, to survive the blip and then fall to, like the helicopter at the end of the war. did it rain people? So, Steve, you're just getting a reaction to the idea of reactivating citizenship, social security, healthcare. Like, if you were a government lawyer and half the population of San Diego reappeared one day and you were tasked with the federal side of how to deal with this nightmare, what would your reaction be to write a plan and execute it?
Well, I think that following the blip, hopefully we would have retained records and in the hopes that people would return. And you would try to make it as seamless a continuation as possible for those who were gone. Now, reality is going to set in, after 1 year becomes two, becomes three, people start giving up hope. And what do you do for people that come back? There are a lot of just fascinating social issues, political issues. Marvel, the MCU, has dealt with it kind of in a funny way by pointing out in the Spider-Man Far From Home that some kids who, when they left, when Peter and some of them left, were sort of small and insignificant. Now they come back and those kids are all big and tough now. And I mean, that's true. Some people, the people that stayed here are 5 years older and stronger, wiser, etc. So what do you do? I mean, there are a lot of real practical problems. And I think, again, this is one where there will be no easy solutions. There's just a million hypotheticals we could throw out there. For example, you are the sole owner of your home. You vanished for 5 years. So they declare, maybe the government seizes your property or your heirs sell it or something like that. Then you come back and you find someone living in your home. Well, now what? I mean, the new person living there is a good faith purchaser. You can't just kick them out, right? But on the other hand, it wasn't your fault that you were gone. You got to, Thanos, if you were alive, would need some darn good lawyers for all the class action lawsuits that would be, he would be hit with. There really are no easy solutions here, and it is an unprecedented situation. I think the closest we could come would be to finding situations where people were thought to have disappeared and then someone came back to try to claim that identity. And there are a few famous cases of that. And I'm thinking of one in England where a rich heir went on some trip and was thought to have died and someone came back and tried to take a claim that they were that person and they had some evidence to back them up. And it was this long drawn out thing, I think in the 18th or 19th century. And it captivated the nation because they were trying to figure out, well, is this the person? And the mother was ready to accept the person, but other families were not. And at stake was a very large inheritance. And ultimately the court ruled against to establish the identity and that new person ended up dying in poverty. But you would get in situations like that where 5 years later, people whose lives have, the life has continued and they try to come back and reclaim their lives. You've got this 5-year interruption, and we're talking interruptions in legal rights, financially, what about your accounts? There's just a host of issues. With the GPC, the Global Repatriation Council, they are tasked with the logistical nightmare of dealing with all this. And I think in reality, there are going to have to be a lot of compromises. I mean, if you look around the world right now, people compare the vaccine rollout to the logistical Olympics. We're trying to get vaccines into so many people to bring this pandemic under control. And that's true. I mean, this is fairly unprecedented, the level of the rollout. But if we're talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe in this 5-year blip where half the world vanished and now they're back and they're kind of saying, okay, we're back. We want to resume our lives where we left off, but you can't because everyone else lived in intervening 5 years. That would be the true logistical Olympics. I can't even imagine the backlog at the Social Security office, government benefits offices. It would just be, I mean, I don't know how you deal with all this, but you would need to have some strong legislation. Multiple countries would probably have to come together and say, okay, we know we can't, we cannot make this fair to everyone. So this is the best we can do. You know, if you're gone, if you were gone 5 years, maybe you get this much credit for, you know, for service time or whatnot, or, you know, this is how we handle some of the probate issues. This is how we handle some of the public benefits. That there, the bottom line is that there's not going to be any good solution here.
Think of as comparison would be the how displaced persons after World War II assisted, and I haven't researched it in detail. I know that it happened, but like looking at what say happened to like Anne Frank's father survived the war, and you know, like he would have been a displaced person. What was done for people like them to help them rebuild their lives? Like who helped? And you know, like, and it's different when you can at least point to a continent that was at war, and there's winners and losers, and you know, a desire to put things right. With the world after the blip in the MCU, it's the world was a battlefield. You could with a straight face, you know, New York was a beachhead, then battle in Wakanda, and then you had the entire planet lose half the population, and that was include animals, like birds disappeared. So it was literally all life. So that raised questions of the logistical nightmare of that. And the fact that they're not treating it as each country for itself is actually optimistic, because I would have thought each country would have done it alone. But if they actually form like another version of the United Nations to tackle that, that is fascinating. But let's get into what I like to think of as a bed and breakfast for terrorists. And Sylvia, your law enforcement and administration of justice analysis that you are so good at doing, when you see a German couple hosting terrorists and they've made a nice secret room with beds for them to sleep in and computer terminals for them to do cyber crimes, what's your reaction to that?
Cooked meals, home cooked meals that are warm. Actually, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. So you provided us with 18 U.S.C. subsection 3, and it says whoever knowing that an offense against the United States has been committed receives, relieves, comforts, or assists the offender in order to hinder or prevent his apprehension, trial, or punishment is an accessory after the fact. So first we have to look at the family. Did they know an offense against the United States was being committed, or do they think they are hiding the flash smashers from the power brokers? Because we found out that they're running, their power brokers are trying to kill the flash smashers and get the vaccines. So if this German couple acted under the impression of we're shielding you and protecting you from the people that are trying to kill you, then it's like, well, you can't be an accessory after the fact. But if they know that, you know, like we said, these are vaccines that came from the U.S. We're trying to create a weapon of mass destruction, which in my opinion is what all these super soldiers are. Then yeah, definitely, because they know what's going on. They know the mission because they support the mission. The one one people, one, I forgot what the phrase was, sorry, blanking. But they know the mission and they're supporting the mission and they're preventing them from being caught. And they're saying, stay here until you're ready to move on. We'll give you a place, you know, or until the coast is clear, essentially. They even provide them with computers so they can track where they're being followed. Because that was the first thing that they did when they got on there is that, oh, they know, they got us. Look at the United States has us. They know who we are. They have pictures of us and they're after us already. So I would say they definitely knew that an offense had been committed and they offered They received them with open arms and Tupperware full of home-cooked meals. They are giving them a place of relief where they can sleep. They're giving them comforts, more comforts than a lot of people have, which is those high-tech computers where they can check how they're being tracked and check how far along they're going. So I definitely think they're guilty of it, unless they're under the assumption that they're helping the Flag Smashers get away from people that are trying to kill them.
Good analysis. I also had an issue with the United States element, which is why I added the second statute, which is supposed to go to more international terrorism, and that's 18 U.S.C. 2339A as an alpha. And that, I think, is a little bit more on point. It's because of all the other code sections that it references that, you know, can include international terrorism. The, you know, things like the Atomic Energy Act of 1954. So I think that might be a better hook for getting them, because I think the other element, with the causal connection to the United States is problematic. But we also, we don't want international terrorism. So it's if your plan is to blow up a U.S. city, we don't want that to happen. Steve, reactions to this really friendly German couple that made chicken liver, which I was ready to check out at that point. I was thinking hey, this looks really comfy until she said chicken liver. If it'd been the rest of the chicken, I would have been on board.
Well, I have to admit, it did not look terribly appetizing to me. Although in the Asian culture, there's an old saying that we will eat anything unless it is made of stone or stands on two legs like people. So people eat, I have eaten all parts of a chicken in various restaurants before. But yeah, this wasn't really at the top of my list. This was no In-N-Out burger or anything like that. So the thing that jumped out at me was, well, these people are definitely aiding and abetting here. And we don't know enough yet about the Flag Smashers, but they seem to be engaged in some kind of illegal or illicit activity, such to the point where they're in hiding. So I think this couple would be in some trouble. There are so many questions involved, like who would catch them? What's the authority? What jurisdiction would they be brought, to? There are a lot of open questions still, a lot of unknowns.
Agreed. But let's get to flying on Sam's magic C-130 again, which doesn't need to refuel. I mean, it could be a Stark reactor in there. I don't know. But Bucky says, let's take the shield and do it ourselves. And Sam says, no, that's a horrible freaking idea. And so there's no conspiracy, because you can't have a one-sided conspiracy. But if you're asking someone to do a crime, that's solicitation. And Sylvia, could you walk us through that? If I asked Steve to, we're going to go fight crime together, and Steve says, are you nuts?
He can say, are you nuts? But if he does it and doesn't withdraw from the actual act, he's going to be guilty of it. With the intent, whoever with the intent that another person engage in conduct constituting a felony that has an element, attempted use or threatened use of physical force against property or against the person of another in violation of the law of the United States, strongly cooperative that intent, solicits commands, he didn't command, he asked. That's great. Induces or otherwise endeavors to persuade such other person to engage. He was definitely persuading. So I would definitely say he was soliciting, because he also did a guilt trip. He was guilt tripping Sam the entire time about, Cap didn't want this. Cap wanted you to have it. There was a reason he chose you. So it was a hardcore solicitation, not just a let's go do it. It's a let's go do it, and here's why we should do it, and here's why you should feel bad, and here's why you should feel bad about making sure you do the right thing, and this is the right thing. So there's a lot of that going on. So for sure on that end.
Chemistry, but more on that. So so that's a no-no. And while we're on the subject of Bucky and no-nos, let's talk about when they interact with the police, we find out Bucky has a warrant for missing his court-appointed therapy, despite the fact he has a presidential pardon. And Steve, can you take that one first? Because I'm going to ask Sylvia to do a really big one in a second. So.
You want me to go with the Terry stop analysis and all of that?
No, not that part, but the fact that there's an actual warrant for Bucky's arrest, and you know, is that a thing? And since the answer is yes, why is it a thing?
Well, we hear about a lot of this after the fact. Bucky clearly, we have to go into his facts a little bit. He was one of our people, and we thought killed in action as a service member, but was actually, and this is taken straight from the comics, turns out Hydra captured him, brainwashed him, gave him powers, gave him a mechanical vibranium arm, and turned him into one of the worst assassins of the 20th century, brainwashed him. And then we later reclaim him, and he joins, the side of our side and helps fight crime again, fight evil, if you will. So we learned that he has been pardoned by the president, which is a pardon that would work for all federal crimes, not necessarily for state crimes. And that a condition of his pardon is the court-ordered, they call it court-ordered therapy, regular therapy visits to make sure that, mentally he is okay. And he's, this is someone who has undergone severe brainwashing, has nightmares, as anyone would, of all the horrible things he has done. So, the government wants to make sure that he's, he's essentially neutralized as a loose cannon, that he's not going to go crazy and start killing people again wantonly or, without reason. In a lot of ways, it's similar to a plea agreement, he makes a plea agreement with the government. There are certain conditions to the plea, one of which is mandatory therapy, regular therapy. I think it's once a week. I think they may have mentioned that. So should he miss that, he's technically in violation, and he is now subject to a number of penalties, up to and perhaps including the revocation of the plea agreement or the immunity that, the pardon that he has been given. So, yeah, he's in trouble. It would make sense that there's a warrant out for him. And he, to his credit, he doesn't fight. He just kind of surrenders. Maybe it's possible for him to renegotiate parts, some of the terms, if he's showing progress or getting better, or if he's becoming an active asset, which it looks like is happening here ultimately. This leads to the great scene that we have with the psychologist or the therapist, the group therapy session, which was very interesting. I'll not touch that yet.
We'll get there. Don't worry, we'll get there. And it looks like John Walker was able to change the plea agreement for Bucky in order to get out of jail. So that's and there are due process rights with, you got arrested, but there's still due process rights with, like, the pardon couldn't just be revoked on its own. So let's get to the awkward, horrible part of this that was really well done in making everyone squirm, where Sam and Bucky, are leaving Isaiah's, and Sam is rightfully upset with, there was a black super soldier and you didn't say anything. And Bucky's saying, like, well, we've been through enough, and they're in Baltimore. And cops stop them, and it gets awkward fast. And you can tell that the police officer realizes he screwed up bad really quick, which, again, would fall in the category of not good. And I could see a city attorney freaking out with, you did what? Sylvia, could you walk us through a stop? And were those cops right to stop them for his ID?
So I'm going to play both sides on this one. First, I want to say I thought it was interesting that Disney and Marvel touched it, because I'm going to point out the obvious that everyone knew. He was two white cops, and they only stopped Sam as the person involved, and he was a black guy, and they were in a community that looked like a lower income community of minorities. Let's just be real. I'm just going to put it out there. Might as well address it. And at first I was like, whoa, is Marvel really going here? I was like, oh, hold on, is Disney really going here? I was like, okay, this is interesting. I mean, they definitely had a right to stop, because it looked, from anyone looking on the outside, like these two were having a very heated argument in the middle of the street. So, you know, to Terry, it says under the Fourth Amendment, we have held a policeman who lacks probable cause, but whose, quote, observations lead him reasonably to suspect that a particular person has committed, is committing, or is about to commit a crime, may detain that person briefly in order to investigate the circumstances that provoke suspicion. So, as far as them officers approaching Sam and Bucky, I thought it was an appropriate approach. They could have assumed that there would have been some kind of physical altercation that was about to occur, given, you know, the way they were talking and the mannerisms they were using and how they were angry. But they're investigating the circumstances, their suspicion. They're not investigating the individuals. And if you're really investigating the situation, ask both gentlemen for their ID. Don't ask one. You know, like, you only asked him, and then even Bucky tried to step in and was like, whoa, hold on. And then they were like, no, let us do our job. And it wasn't until he found out who Sam actually was. And then he was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And it's like, so if this hadn't been the Falcon, would you have then asked him for ID and just continued with your, what you were doing? Like, I thought it was very interesting for Disney to address that in Marvel. And it was just, to me, it was just like, oh, this is getting awkward really fast. Like, oh, man. But were they okay to approach and investigate the circumstances that arose their suspicion? Sure. But were they okay to pinpoint just Sam and ask just Sam for his ID? You know, ask both gentlemen, identify yourselves. We want to make sure, you know, what's going on here. But I don't know. It's kind of a very blurred kind of stop, kind of like, eh. The officer can detain him for a moderate amount of questions, determine identity, and try to obtain information confirming or dispelling the officer's suspicions. But Sam didn't have to respond. You know, I don't have to ID you. I don't have to give you my ID. I don't have to tell you who I am, you know? So
it was fascinating to see that Bucky goes from good ally to bad. And I don't think he intended to go bad. But when Bucky's saying, like, stop, leave him alone, good. When he said to Sam, show me your ID, and it's like, dude, like, that was, it canceled out. Because Sam didn't have to show his ID. And, you know, I'd go to, am I being detained? I mean, it would be one thing if the cops just like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, what's, like, going on? What are you guys arguing about? Okay, let's separate you guys. Let's see what, well, let's, you know, let's talk this through. All right, cool. Everyone's calm now. Everyone go on their way, kind of thing. But just to pinpoint Sam was just kind of like,
eh. Yeah, that was, no, that's a to happen, and
it would be more bad jury appeal, especially right now. A terrible jury appeal. It's just like, no.
Well, that, and I mean, talk about, you know, the sympathetic plaintiff. Yeah, I helped save the world, you know. And remember the flying aircraft carriers? Helped with that one.
Yeah, it kind of bothered me. I was like, what's happening here? I was like, I'm a prosecutor, and if this case came across my desk, I would be worried about any kind of suppression motion right now. Like, what's going on? So, yeah.
Yeah, it just, they took on timely topics very well, and they didn't shy away from it, and it's good to make people uncomfortable. Well done. I was cringing the entire time, and so, well done. Made me feel. Steve, anything to add as a government attorney who would probably go yell at people for doing this?
I have many thoughts. I think Sylvia hit a lot of the key issues, though. Certainly one thing that jumped to mind was why not question everybody, both sides here, you know, make it a little more, it would be more equal, you know, and more justifiable under the applicable rules in that situation. But I thought it was good that Marvel did present this. I mean, it's a timely issue. Terry versus Ohio happened in 1968, and here we are in 2021, and we're still talking about these issues. You know, they're pretty timeless, and I don't know that the facts actually change all that much, frankly.
They don't, and it's just the issue with law enforcement and how we conduct law enforcement in this country is an active discussion point, and will continue to be, because there have been ugly events that need to be addressed.
Yeah, and this situation, my dad's a retired LA County Sheriff's deputy, and he would train reserve deputies. And in this scenario, when two people are involved in any altercation, if you have two officers, one officer takes one and pulls that person to the side, another officer takes the other and pulls him to the side. That would have been the appropriate and proper way to approach the situation instead of just targeting Sam, because they were both targeting Sam the entire time and not worrying about Bucky. It was just like, it takes two to make this fight happen. So
they called it.
Yeah.
Oh, you schmucks. It's just,
without assessing the situation first, yeah.
Yeah, that, and I mean, I do love the look of terror on the cop's face after his partner says, "Do you realize who that is?" And just the, again, like, that was process. When you screw up, you screwed up, and there's no. It's very difficult to walk back from.
But it's also sad though that it took, like. So had Sam not been a person of recognition, they would have proceeded just as wrongfully as they were doing it. Like that, it's like, okay, so you need to be, you have to have stature and be recognized. Like for me, it was just like, so yeah.
It's horrible. I mean, it's just, it's why people have marched in this country, because we don't like this. And the fact that a TV show about superheroes took it on directly, it's very brave, and it's what we do as lawyers in helping assess right from wrong. Which brings us to the other point that was really brave for them to get into with such a wonderful character, and that's Isaiah Bradley, who was Captain America, and the little spin on his story. So he would have been after Steve Rogers, and would have been in the Cold War era, and spent 30 years in prison. And there's, I have questions on where and how with that. And God, there's so much to unpack there. But for those who read Young Avengers, the young man that we saw that was his grandson could be Ellie Bradley, who will become Patriot and a member of the Young Avengers. So we've already seen Cassie, who will become Stature, who's Ant-Man's daughter. And then you have Wanda's kids. And so we, you know, in this, we're starting to see all the makings of, I don't know if that's phase six.
Kate Bishop Hawkeye too.
Yeah, she's on her way. Yeah. So, it's like, again, for mega nerds who've been reading the comics, it's like I wanted to applaud, and because that scene is so well done. And there has been ugliness in this country with doing experiments on African Americans, and the story of Isaiah in the comics at least played on that. I don't know if they're going to do that in this show, if he was a volunteer or not. I don't know where they're gonna go. And I sense when he was imprisoned, there's a Hydra connection that got him in prison. So I don't know if that was internal or if he was captured after fighting Bucky. Sounds like Isaiah won the fight against the Winter Soldier, and it's at another point that he's imprisoned. And I'm sure we'll get to explore that later, and that could be a rich blog post with lots of legal issues. Did either of you nerd out with that? because I know you both read comics as well. Steve, did you, you're smiling, Steve. What was your reaction to that scene?
I was fascinated, but there's just still so much more we need to know about where they're going to go with this. You know, are they going to play into the, oh, this is the bitter former government operative who used to be entrusted and was held up, you know, as the model, you know, soldier who then was kind of thrown under the bus and is now angry at the government. Are they going to go with that angle? It seemed like they kind of were, but they pulled back a little bit from that. I think it's safe to say we have not seen the last of them, and there's a lot more to learn here. Where they're probably going to go, if I had to guess, is that, you know, the government was just very practical. They just wanted their super soldiers, and when the super soldiers were no good, they cast them aside and tried to create more. And that's, in fact, I mean, Captain America, Steve Rogers, was intended to be the first of many super soldiers, but became the first of one simply because Dr. Erskine was assassinated, and, you know, the secret of the Vita Rays was lost, and, you know, they weren't able to duplicate that in many of the comics. So, I mean, you know, we get into many, many issues, you know, ethical, political, et cetera. If creating armies of super soldiers that would completely change the balance of power in the world, you know, what would we do there? You know, what would be right? We kind of started touching on those issues here with the introduction of Isaiah, and maybe we'll get further into that. It'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Sylvia, did you recognize the character, or have any thoughts when we saw him?
I didn't at first, but I was shocked, and I was just like, oh wow. But I didn't recognize it at first. I was curious as to where they were going with it as well. I think we'll have to watch a lot more to see what happens there. I have a strong suspicion this is not the end of it, you know?
I would believe that Bucky wanted Sam to meet him, because Bucky's trying, it's that weird pep talk of like, you need to carry the shield. Here's someone who did, and like, you know, get you the legacy. And I would hope something along those lines. That doesn't make him like a Yoda on how to be Captain America, but just something, you know, to aspire to. And yeah, I also like that actor a lot. So it's because he played it so well. Let's get to, okay, like the big, and that's the joint therapy. And again, I'm an evidence nerd. I love privileges and all that good stuff. And normally a privilege is like between your doctor, it could be a psychologist or a therapist, and the patient. You have to have it in a confidential setting. And in a confidential setting, the privilege is blown. Like ordering Sam to join Bucky's therapy, that's weird. As friends who can talk about the reasons for that, but let's, as lawyers, let's talk about the legal impact of that. And Steve, you wanted to broach this earlier, so take it away, buddy, and help us understand what the heck happened. Did that blow the privilege?
So I think this question is a little more complicated than people may realize. There are a couple analogies that we can draw. I mean, physician-patient privilege is similar to the attorney-client privilege. The privilege exists because we want to encourage open and honest communication between the parties. And we therefore protect those communications, which means that neither party can be compelled to testify if they don't want to. However, they often can voluntarily testify if the holder of the privilege can waive it if they so choose. This is a little more, before even getting there, you know, the standard attorney-client privilege, you know, exists between the attorney, the client. It encourages open, honest communication. And there is case law saying that that privilege is waived if there is the presence of a third party in the room or during that communication as well, because the reasoning is that, you know, one could not reasonably expect to have that privilege because there are other people present now, and there's no just sort of direct one-on-one confidential communication at that point. So if we judge by that analogy, you know, and extend it to the group therapy session, which is essentially what this was, one therapist and two patients, you know, if it were one therapist, one patient, I think unquestionably there is a privilege. So this issue presents the question of what if you have one therapist with two patients, and we know that Bucky was the patient of the therapist. Sam appears to be a new patient of the therapist. So can there be any privilege here? I think under a lot of the traditional rules, you probably would be hard pressed to find some privilege. But I imagine that there would be some ways in which, you know, Sam could try to prevent Bucky from testifying, or, you know, vice versa. I think they could try to assert it. I don't know if they would be successful, but I think there are, if we look at some of the elements that are classically involved with the finding of a privilege, one would be sort of the reasonable expectation of some form of privacy or privilege. And they are in a small room, only the three of them. Arguably, one could argue, like, hey, I thought that if this was a safe place, we could talk about what we wanted. I'm sort of making the case for that. And also, we have a professional here, a licensed professional, whose job it is to counsel soldiers who have been through traumatic events. That's what we're doing. We're working through difficult issues. So this is sort of the definition or the example of what should be a privileged session. I don't know that the law would necessarily back all of that up, but it's possible they could find, you know, they might be able to find some protection. I think if you look at a strict reading of the laws of privilege as we understand them, I think they're going to have an uphill battle. But I'm not saying that the battle is entirely lost, because there are some of the classic hallmarks of privilege here.
Sylvia, reaction to that, if this was being introduced in a hearing showing that Bucky violated his conditions of his pardon?
I mean, I think I would have, and I'm not playing one side or the other here. I like to sometimes go down the middle because my job makes me play one side, so I have to stay in the middle. I'm not sure Bucky waived whatever privilege he had with his therapist, because he never choosing Sam going. It was literally the therapist saying, no, you're coming, we're doing this joint session, and that's the bottom line, you know? Because even Sam was like, is she serious? I have to go? And she turned and said, that was not a question, you're coming. So at that point, it's like, okay, well, did the psychiatrist, I mean, the patient had no say in this, essentially. So it's kind of like, so then, no. And like, well, I don't understand, like, you forced a third person, so then Bucky didn't waive whatever privilege he did have with you, you know? So now Sam knows anything, and if Sam's going to testify against you, would I really allow that in? Because, like, I don't know. It was just, to me, it was very, like, why is she forcing, like, privilege-wise at least? Like, Bucky had literally no say in saying, no, I kind of want to keep our stuff confidential. I kind of want to keep what we have between you and I, and not bring a third person. She literally ordered Sam to go. So it's like, okay, so then you broke it, not the patient. So.
Which gets into this weird, almost false imprisonment situation with Sam. It's just like, you can't kidnap Sam to a therapy session. Like, that's not how this works. He did nothing wrong. And so, yeah, it was funky, but it was also, it was hysterical.
I was going to say, that was a great scene to watch. It was hilarious. Yeah.
The chemistry between the two actors is rich. Yeah. I want to hang out and barbecue with those guys. Like, they are fun. But that, I mean, again, like, are we doing this? Like, it was brilliant. Bucky's line about, if Steve was wrong about you, then he was wrong about me. And talk about deep character analysis with meaning and feeling. Like, that was Okay, I love that.
But Bucky made a lot of progress right there. The therapist was right to bring in Sam because just for that breakthrough right there.
When Bucky said that, I was like, I felt that one. I was like, oh, man. I was like, okay, now I get why you're doing what you're doing, buddy. I get it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well done. And, again, this is an excellent show. And as much as I love the, you know, MCU movies, there's an element of TV shows that work better for these characters, especially the sidekicks, like who aren't, you know, like the main focus of character development and exploration, that we're getting a deep dive with these two, and it's exceptional. So just the issues that they're covering, whether it's mental health or racism, law enforcement's foibles, like they're going there, and it's fantastic. So, and there's lots of stuff for us to talk about and blog about. So that's episode 2, The Star Spangled Man. And we'll be back next week. Do either of you have any other observations before we call it a night?
No, I mean, I was excited at the ending. I was like, oh my God, they're gonna, oh yes, let's go next episode. So that was it.
You know, we didn't talk a lot about John Walker and Battlestar here. There's a lot of rich material there as well. But I think we can cover that probably in future episodes.
Oh, I'm sure we'll get episodes focused on them. And I will say,
Sylvia, my wife had a similar comment when you mentioned, oh, Chris Evans, you know, he's so handsome. And who's this guy? My wife said exactly the same things. She said, who's this guy? He's no Chris Evans. Oh, but then again, Chris Evans is pretty darn handsome. So I guess that's a hard standard.
Yeah, we watched this episode with my best friend and her fiance, and it was the same thing. We were just like,
it's hard to follow a legend, right? Yeah. You know?
I mean, his parents are, you know, well known, so.
Yes, we immediately saw that. I didn't realize that until we Googled it after, and I was like, oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's like, so. There's a reason why he looks familiar. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
I see both mom and dad in him. So, okay, I totally get that now.
Dad was in Guardians of the Galaxy, so it's like, let's just continue the Disney tradition, the Marvel, you know, tradition, so.
It's fantastic. But we'll talk more about that with future episodes. And everyone, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay geeky. And until then, we'll see y'all soon. You take care.